It's Wednesday, September 30th, 2015, and welcome to episode 181 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And today, Cindy and I are going to have a conversation about rapid prototyping. So we're going to learn a little bit more about what that is and some of the tips and tricks that I've used over the years to help, as well as having a conversation about new technology and how certain teachers adopt it or not adopt it.
That's right. You know, I'm learning a lot today from you about this process and how we approach all of these things. It's good to have a plan for the plan.
So sit back, relax, and here we go. First today, I thought we would spend some time just having a general discussion. We've been talking about some of the different projects and things that we're involved with right here in the middle of the semester. And one of the things that I always share with our students as they work on different projects and assignments, something that I've really implemented all throughout my career that I call rapid prototyping. And what a rapid prototype is basically going through a whole scenario, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's coming up for Tech Talk for Teachers this week, we have a lot of students out in the field right now, either doing practicum or student teaching.
Right.
And they are currently videoing themselves teaching and having to put together a little video.
Right. Sort of a highlight reel.
And then reflecting upon that experience and then turning it in for various assignments. Sounds simple enough.
It does. Oh, absolutely. They've been making videos and taking pictures forever.
Except there are some requirements and things that they need to consider whenever they're doing this. And what seems simple until you actually do it and right. go through the steps, it's almost like anything else. It's like we may think we know how to do it, but when you're behind, you know, the teacher's desk or whatever, it's different on this side of the desk.
Right. And what we do for fun and what we do for a specific purpose for someone else is very different, too. So,
right.
There's a whole new approach to it. And some of the students get that, and some of them still approach it just like they would something they were doing for fun.
Right.
And then you have to go back and redo. And so, yeah, anything we can give them ahead of time to help them not have to redo.
Right. So I've met with several student groups just kind of giving hints and tips. And, of course, I've got a OneNote page for that.
Of course.
So it's available for them to refer back to. But obviously the first piece of advice you give anybody is put your camera on a tripod. And, again, you would think that that would be, you know, just common knowledge out there.
Yeah.
But unless you kind of make that almost a requirement, because you don't want a video sitting there with somebody holding it, bouncing around for
exactly.
20 minutes.
Or a stack of books where you have a book edge right at the, you know, within the frame the whole time.
That's the second thing, you know, whenever you frame that up. And depending upon what type of camera you have, and if you're right. a solo teacher out there, you're probably nervous to begin with because you're in the classroom with, you know, whatever third graders, eighth graders, whatever you're
sure.
whatever grade level you're teaching. For the first time, you're in charge. You know, you're out there giving the lessons.
Yep.
So there's a lot going on. We all know that as teachers. You've got 30 faces looking at you. You know, a lot of different things going on. But just something simple as framing that, and mm-hmm. that's a piece of advice I give. Set your camera up. Know what your frame is. Walk to the
right.
left. Walk to the right. Know when you're in frame and when you're out of frame.
So sort of set the stage. Put mm-hmm. some tape on the floor, if nothing else, just so mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing worse than getting it finished. It goes awesome.
Right.
And then when you watch it, you realize that you were.
Or the height, cutting off your head the whole time that you're giving the lesson.
Right.
Again, these are simple things, but unless you go through a rapid prototype system, you don't necessarily know that until you hit stop. And then it's like, oh.
Whoops.
Whoops. So that, and then we also have some file limit sizes on the technical side, which is causing a few issues there. So after we edit, we have to get it below a certain
sure.
megabyte size so we can upload it to online systems, because video files can be huge.
Yes.
And then if you're placing a camera next to a group of students, realize that the microphone, the closer mm-hmm. the microphone is to somebody, that's what's going to be picked up. So if you have a group of students talking, you know, you set the camera right beside them and you're at the front of the room, it's going to pick the sound up from the students.
Right.
That's just the way microphones work.
Well, and so much of that is just things to do up front that can make your life easier. And sometimes, unless you've done it, you don't know that. So that's, listening to someone who has done it mm-hmm. is so valuable because, you know, and we know their peers have more influence on sometimes than we do. And that, but having someone say, you know, they finished the whole thing and then had this issue or that.
Right.
It's helpful.
And then kind of another obvious thing that we've run into a little bit in this rapid prototype process, how are you going to get that video off the camera or device that you're using? And again, maybe, you know, we would think common sense, but I just had a situation this week. A student brought in an Android tablet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to get bring your own device and everything. We've got everything,
right.
you know, coming at us. But this particular Android device, the cable was broken. The USB cable, so we weren't able to plug it in, and it was an internal storage, so it didn't have a, you know, an external SD card that
sure.
we could pop out. So about the only choice left is to sign in online and log in, and with the browser, and then upload the video there. Same thing with the iPads; we get a lot of students using
sure.
those. One of the big things that we have with that is they will turn them sideways or upside down.
And then it adjusts.
Well, it doesn't adjust. That's the problem.
Oh, it doesn't.
So they'll record upside down for the whole time.
Oh, my gosh. No kidding. I had no idea that would happen.
On some of the models. I don't know if the new ones are still that way. But, again, we have some video editing software that
right.
you could actually rotate.
Sure.
But that's an extra step.
But and that's the beauty and the challenge of everyone having different devices and different operating systems and different software.
Yeah, it's
and
very challenging. Yeah.
All of those things, you know, that each one's going to be a little bit unique.
Right. And, you know, in teaching and learning, we're always talking about differentiated instruction
yes.
and things like that. Everybody's comfortable with a little bit different piece. But unless you go through this entire rapid prototype process, you're not going to identify those problems until after they occur, and then it's too late oftentimes.
Right. Are you going to define the rapid prototype process?
The rapid prototype process, my definition, is basically taking a project or scenario from start to finish mm-hmm. and doing it in what I call a skeletal way. You're just kind of out there putting the structure and the bones on something. You're not going into details. And part of this is from my background in instructional design.
Right.
Because back, way back when, in the 1960s, with behaviorism and things influencing education, we had very strict, rigid, you know, step one, step two, step three, step four.
Right.
And that works well if you define what those steps are in the beginning. The problem, with, especially in today's world, is we don't know all of those variables up front. Also with computer programming. Back in the day, whenever I was learning computer programming on punch cards, we used to have to do flowcharts.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you ever did it, you know, any of the flowcharting things, but, you know, basically decision trees,
sure.
yes, no, whatever. It was very structured. That was part of the documentation process. And I've been through many projects, both in the corporate world and also in education. But the problem oftentimes with those, we don't spend enough time on what's called the analysis part to really define the problem.
Sure.
And you'll get, you know, 3/4 or 90% through a project, and then somebody will come out and say, well, we also need this program to do this. And that just, you know, completely.
So if you're trying to work linear, then all of a sudden you've got a left turn in there that
yes.
you have to add mid-flow.
And that's time and money and,
sure.
you know, everything else. So this rapid prototype, and the reason I'm such a fan of it is iterative. So you have to do it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
You can identify some of those left turns, right turns, as you go through the process. Like, oh, I cut my head off whenever I was videoing. You know, that's
sure.
something easy to rectify with a little practice session and a real quick rapid prototype. But it also gives us the chance to improve the process as we go through. And like I said, I've been involved in many software coding projects where you're working with experts in the field. And they have in their mind what they want to do, but sometimes
yes.
getting it out of that mind and explaining it.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you can explain that process to a programmer to code, you know, you're going to have problems.
Right.
So That's my definition of rapid prototyping.
But that's interesting because it is an approach, and you know, everybody has their own approach to learning. And that you and I talked about, I was a presentation I was working on, how I said I know where I want to start, I know where I want to finish, and I'll have, you know, 80 slides that then I bring down.
Right.
And that through my process.
And that's a design decision right up front. You know, you have to identify those constraints. It's like, mm-hmm. I have 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever the time. So, mm-hmm. you know, what is a reasonable number?
Right.
And you will see people all over the board.
Exactly.
Some people will do like a slide every 10 seconds, and some people one every 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. But it's neat to see how it's the process, but it's just different names applied to different situations and scenarios.
Right. And part of the instructional design process, you know, early in the process is define your audience.
Yes.
So you need to know, you know, as good teachers know, you know, who are we going to be teaching
sure.
this lesson to? And then also,
where are they at? Assessing, formative assessment.
And prerequisite knowledge. What do they already know?
Yes.
How can we scaffold and tie in, you know, some of the new things that we're trying to, and again, that's not so easy to do sometimes.
Mm-mm.
That's also, you know, we're moving a lot of this teaching and learning online. So mm-hmm. as we digitize it, those problems become bigger problems because the teacher able to think on their feet whenever they get a question from
right.
a student and tie that in, or a student will, again, maybe go off on a different tangent. How do you tie that lesson structure? And a good teacher can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But online, if you have that pre-canned, and this goes back again, 60s and 70s, I was a victim of programmed instruction. I don't know, going through school and things, we would get different canned, coded programs
mm-hmm.
and like, you know, learn this and again, step by step by step. And again, we've gone through this evolution. The technologies over my career have certainly gotten much better and many more options, but teaching, you know, it's a complex system.
It is.
That we're dealing with. In many ways, you know, it's kind of one of those, in many ways it's complex, and then in some ways it's like, well, it's simple. You know, you start with what they know and build upon from there.
But then when you have 20-some and everyone's in a different place.
Yes. But that is where the light at the end of the tunnel is for some of this technology, where we have a huge opportunity for the differentiated instruction. How can we use some of these tools to help that, individualize that instruction, or the big term now is personalize.
Right.
You know, personalize that instruction to be more effective as a teacher to help the students learn. Another thing I'd like to talk about along with this rapid prototyping, it helps me identify what works and what doesn't quickly. You know, if there are problems, I can address them as needed. But it also lets me experiment with new technologies. So I just made a quick list here of some of the things that I would like for every pre-service teacher here at EIU to have some exposure and experience with. And, you know, ultimately, it would be great if they would have created some of these or used these different technologies to produce products. So one, what we're doing right here right now,
mm-hmm.
there's not a reason in the world that every pre-service teacher could not come out of here with a podcast. We have the technology. Every one of our computers out here have microphones. We can do that. It's just a matter of, you know, setting those up and, again, prioritizing what's important or what gets measured. So if we make that, and we do have some of that, like in our EDU 2022 course with mm-hmm. some of those projects. And I used to teach that course, and I had a lot of flexibility in there with where they get to choose. You know, I just give them a list of technologies,
right.
like, okay, take a deep dive, your choice, into one of these.
Well, and a lot of that comes from purpose. You know, are they doing it because it's a requirement, or are they doing it because it's something they really do enjoy and they think it's going to continue mm-hmm. happening? You know, they want to keep
it going. It's that
personal
thing again.
Exactly. And then, so if you know why you're doing something, it helps you focus on the direction you want to go with it. And that
mm-hmm.
way you're not just kind of flailing about. Where
mm-hmm.
you know, we've seen students try to start podcasts and teachers try to start podcasts or blogs and things. And they start, and then it just kind of goes in different directions, and there's not really a clear purpose, and so you don't know. So knowing your audience helps you decide your content. People that listen to this know what they're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
well, within reason, they know what they're going to get. And so, you know, there's that whole establishment of purpose that I think, like you said, personalizing it is so key.
Mm-hmm. And then like blogs, we have so many free options available out there. And what's different than way back whenever I was going through a teacher education program is with the internet and things, you know, these are shareable with the world. And you're only a click away for having a worldwide audience.
Mm-hmm.
Wikis, web pages, making YouTube videos. If you're with Office 365, with the Office Mixed and Office 365 video, and of course OneNote, Skype or Adobe Connect. You know, I think you have a conference coming up where you're using Adobe Connect.
We are.
Our learning management systems, Desire to Learn. And then another one, recent fact, last night I was involved in an Illinois Ed chat on Twitter regarding makerspaces. So that's a you know, one of those hot topics right now in education with some of that hands-on, minds-on type learning. But out of that list, you know, that I just went down, you know, all of our teacher, pre-service teachers, and for that matter, faculty, staff, can have a audience out there, you know, worldwide. Again, sure. whether it's worldwide, you know, that's not why we're doing it. We have a specific audience intended, or it may be totally personal. Mm-hmm. You know, in case of OneNote, just private OneNote notebooks. I mean, that's...
Yeah, sometimes it's they have in a platform, and once you figure out what that platform is, then go in with it and all. But you don't have to do all of them.
Oh, absolutely not. You get overwhelmed.
Oh, absolutely. Because as you were going through that list, it's like, okay, I've tried a couple of those, and I failed miserably. But that's okay, because I tried them, and mm-hmm. I know what works for me. And for my Teaching with Primary Sources program, our website goes gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
A very successful website, and people all over the world use it. I'm incredibly proud of that. But a lot of the things that are on there that people use are things that have been on there a couple of years.
I find
and
that
it's that consistency that they, you know, are mm-hmm. coming back. And the new things are viewed too as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but you know, it's we get in those comfort zones with the things that we link to mm-hmm. and the things that we used often. And I use, you know, Facebook and Twitter all the time for fun, mm-hmm. personally, not mm-hmm. for work and that. But we talked about, I got a WordPress site
mm-hmm.
and that. And so started.
That's a blogging.
I started my, started a little blog mm-hmm. that's personal. And mm-hmm. can I talk about that now?
So, yeah,
okay,
sure.
All right. And I just call it "What Do You Speak?" What do you speak?
Mm-hmm.
But it goes with my content literacy
mm-hmm.
stuff that I'm doing, and it's just whatdoyouspeak.com is what it is. But it also gives me an opportunity to kind of organize my thoughts.
Mm-hmm. That's what I find with
down.
A lot of this.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have a big audience. I don't send it out to everybody or mm-hmm. anything. So it's kind of an online notebook
mm-hmm.
or online diary.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but it's focused
mm-hmm.
and that, and so, you know, I'm going to give this a shot and see what happens.
Well,
and
I think with any, you know, type of technology, with the adoption, and that's a topic for a whole other show, done a lot of work, and this has been around since I think the 1960s, but Everett Rogers, Diffusions of Innovation, if you've not mm-hmm. read that book as an educator, or especially as an ed tech teacher, that's definitely worth a read, where he goes through and explains, well, the name of the book is Diffusions of Innovation. So how does a new innovation spread and be adopted, you know, over time? Why do so many of these, like podcasts, you know? I go back, I remember back in 2004, 2005, whenever, you know, podcast was the latest craze. And we mm-hmm. go through these, you know, bandwagon
right.
type events, and podcast certainly was one of them. And again, it still exists. It's still out there, but it's lost its momentum or its excitement because it's not new.
Yes.
We're always looking for that next new thing, that big mm-hmm. new thing, whatever it might be. But yet it has so much power, you know, just two individuals here having a conversation. It reminds me of the way I learned as a kid. You go down to the gas station and sit around, you know, and listen to people talk,
right.
you know, in a farming community or whatever. You pick up a lot of information. You know, just sitting there gathering, you know, all the, and it's a social activity.
Exactly. Oh, and so much of that, too, is now we see with vines
mm-hmm.
and different things like that that are getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah, vines are, what are they,
Vine are just short, 6 seconds.
6 seconds,
six
video.
Second video clips. And that, and things like Periscope, where it's live when it's live, and then it's gone, you know, and that, and so, it, I don't know what that says about us, that we are going shorter and shorter.
Well, we were joking.
Snippets.
Yeah. Squirrel.
Yeah, exactly. And that, but it's hard to compete, and to ask somebody to sit, you know, especially some of the students we have now on campus, if we ask them to sit and listen to, a 40-minute podcast.
Right.
They want to be doing three other things at the same time. Yep. They'll do it.
Yeah.
But to just sit and listen is a challenge.
Yeah. So, you know, what makes some of those, and, you know, you and I are on Rogers' diffusion scale, there's innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, and laggards. You and I are probably innovators, early adopters in ed tech. We're doing a podcast.
We are.
You know what? Wow, it's been 10 years. 10 years after they first became popular. So the other thing I think.
We're now like settlers.
Well, yeah,
we're not pioneers. We're settlers.
I would say in the age of technology, we're like really, really old. We're on that tail end of that technology, but it will always
we're
be here.
We're elders in the community.
Yes. And, you know, before podcast became popular, it was internet radio. I mean, it was a different technology. Of course, before then, it was radio. I mean, radio was an innovative technology at one point back in, you know, late 1890s or, you know, whenever.
Right.
Early 1900s. And then
back
TV
in the day.
Back in the day. Don't remember back that far, but close. But, you know, these technologies come and go, and it's interesting seeing the longevity of what, you know, what works and what sticks around. You know, blogs have been around since the 90s. It's given people, everyday people, a worldwide, you know, as I say, worldwide audience or expression. But people don't do that for that. I mean, we don't do this for that. We're sharing, you know, things that we've learned and hopefully pick up a few things. And want to try some different things, but YouTube is another excellent example. You name the topic, you go out and do a search on YouTube, and there'll be somebody showing you how. Like I do woodworking for a hobby, so I mean, there's tons of YouTube videos on that. My wife crochets, so there's all kinds of different YouTube videos about you name it, anything obscure. It's
going to
be out there.
There's someone who's doing it. Someone who has a shared interest,
and they do it with a passion.
Yes.
I mean, that's why they're taking the effort and time. And, you know, we should drop them a note, give them a like, subscribe to their channels.
Yes.
That's the currency of saying thank you for taking the time to help me learn something new.
Which, man, talk about a segue or a commercial, goes right with the what do you speak that I'm talking about with content literacy. Because you're finding other people that speak on your speak the language of your woodworking projects. They speak crocheting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's content literacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's understanding the nuances of what the task is and what you're doing, and that, and so yeah, we find actually it's kind of cool now that you pointed that out. We find these communities of people
learning
who have
social.
The same interest and the same, you know, like thinkers that we can be part of, even though geographically we're miles away,
and
or even over time. Mm-hmm. It's 2 years. The person puts the YouTube video up, I'm watching it 4 years later to learn that.
Yeah. And I just think that's a basic human need that, you know, we go out there, we share. And as you can tell with a teacher, and that's why I tell our teacher educators, you can tell from a teacher if they're excited about their subject matter.
Yes.
They'll talk all day about whatever it might be and be excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that rubs off. That rubs off on the students.
Right.
And I mean, I think you need to be patient about your subject area.
But you also need to empower your students to speak the language of the content.
Yes.
And so, you know, listening to you talk about your projects that you're working on the weekends. Well, actually, okay, you taught me what a Craig jig was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working on a project. And so I'm learning the language of woodworking from my conversations with you.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, if you were just talking about those things, I'd be clueless. I wouldn't be learning anything.
Well, that's
so it's pulling the other people into the conversation.
That's another magical thing about education is, I don't know, I'm sure everybody's had this experience, but you'll be studying something like in social studies. And again, a good teacher will tie real world in the now events happening right now to whatever it is they're talking about. So say you're doing a unit on South America. Mm-hmm. Well, recently Chile had an earthquake, right, and a tsunami. And once you become aware of whatever it is, South America, Chile, just start paying attention in the news, you know, and over the course of the next 2 weeks, find something related to South America, mm-hmm, out there. And again, people will think, well, what in the world does that have any tie-in or something, right, in Illinois, you know, of all places? It's like we're so far, a different continent, things like that. Well, it just so happens that Brazil is one of the largest soybean producers. So farmers are very attuned to what's going on in South America because it affects markets, sure, and things. You know, again, you pick the subject area, you can tie it into whatever, right, you know, whatever it is. So it's been interesting. Like I said, talking about this rapid prototyping, make those mistakes early. And then another acronym, this might be, what do you speak? Here's an excellent term. Have you heard the acronym FAIL, F-A-I-L? Have you heard, mm-mm, what that stands, no, for? First attempt in learning.
No.
So instead of, you know, having all these failures, and that's what the maker spaces are about as well, giving people opportunities to learn, to make mistakes, iterate, and improve. The next time, you get better. It's like anything else in life. You practice at something, you get better if you practice correctly.
Well,
and that's where a coach or teacher can come in very, yeah, handy too.
It's developing that culture of it's okay to ask questions, and it's, yes, okay to be confused, and, you know, things like that. And that's
such a more exciting learning environment than, yes, you know, the dry facts and, you know, regurgitating, you know, multiple choice type things. So,
well, and we've been in rooms where we're a room full of people who all are just trying to show how smart they are.
Yeah.
And they each want the stage so they can, you know, put on their little show. And it's like a lot of people clam up,
yeah,
when that happens. But if you're in a situation where people are asking questions and just,
again, that's the art of teaching.
Exactly. It's so much more powerful.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll go ahead. We've been going on for a little bit, but I think this was a good conversation to have. That book I mentioned was Diffusions of Innovation. So if you're not aware of that in the EdTech community, certainly, it's well worth a read. Talks about the adoption phase and different things to go through. Mm-hmm. What makes a technology or, you know, any innovation stick around or go away? So we'll leave it there. Hopefully you got something out of this conversation, and we'll move on to our tech picks of the week. For my technology pick of the week this week, I thought I would share a new blog series that I'm currently working on, just getting a start on it, and the name of this series is Pedagogy 365, and I've got three or four, I'll be posting another one today, blog post about using Office 365, that's, mm-hmm, where the name Pedagogy 365 comes from, but using Office 365 for teaching and learning. And, of course, being the OneNote fan that I am, that's the one I'm starting with.
Because
we just talked about diffusions of innovation. And one of the first steps of whether a new innovation goes anywhere, like OneNote, I consider an innovation, even, mm-hmm, though it's been around for a decade or so, but is awareness. You know, you can't adopt something if you're not aware of it.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm writing this blog series out there, to let more teachers know about the capabilities. And the capabilities are immense, in that we are at a stage with teaching and learning, and we talk about going digital with this teaching and learning and online. For the first time, we have the capability of making digital notebooks that are able to be easily shared with specific individuals. You could keep them private, or you could share it to the world. So I've got a few posts on that. The one I'll post today is on what I'm calling a Study Buddy OneNote notebook.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked a little bit about rapid prototyping.
Right.
So I'm challenging readers of this blog series to go out and create a OneNote notebook with you and a partner, a Study Buddy. Anybody here, any student, college-age student, can go out to Office 365 for free, save a notebook, a OneNote notebook, to OneDrive, share that notebook with their study buddy, by giving them edit permission. So that means they both can change it.
Right.
Then they have the capability of collaborative note taking.
Sure.
Which is kind of an oxymoron, I think, because everybody thinks about note taking as a solitary experience. But now we have the capability of being collaborative, which sure. opens up a whole nother realm for learning. And we just talked a little bit about people being passionate about, you know, YouTube videos and things.
Yep.
Whenever we have this social context, we're bouncing things off. And, you know, one of the very strong effect sizes for learning is peer instruction.
Mm-hmm. Well, and with collaborative note taking, they're annotating. Mm-hmm. And they're engaging with it again. And we know that the more repetition mm-hmm. and the more exposure to information, mm-hmm. yeah, their comfort zone is going to increase tremendously, or comfort level.
And we'll put a link into your blog. What was it called again?
What do you speak?
Okay, what do you speak? So as a teacher, I'm sure you've had this experience too. I often, whenever I have trouble explaining a concept mm-hmm. to students, I often let other students explain it
yes.
to other students. If I go through something once and then I try it a different way, and if it's still not getting through, a teaching strategy is, okay, you know, ask for a volunteer. Okay, who can mm-hmm. explain this in their own words?
Right.
It means something different coming from a fellow student.
It does. And one of my either character flaws or strengths, it goes both ways. I use analogies all the mm-hmm. time that are completely unrelated to what I'm teaching, mm-hmm. but
you're trying to tie it to
something. Trying to illustrate it, you know, somehow. And that, but yeah, exactly. It's, you know, the same, we can each look at the same thing and we're going to see it a little bit differently. And if we can communicate that to each other, and we're just giving each other a little extra boost.
Right.
So that's a great idea.
So that one will be posted today. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, I'll have that one posted and a link in the show notes for that. And then before I turn it over to you for your tech pick, a while back we were starting our keyboard shortcuts of the week segment mm-hmm. things that kind
yeah.
of dropped off. But right before you walked in the door to record this, I used one and control shift uh-huh. and the letter T. Do you remember what that one was? Control shift T.
Tab.
That's exactly Yahoo. It. So I was
context clues.
There we go. Yep. Mnemonic devices right there. So, but I had a tab opened in the Chrome browser and I accidentally hit the X. I thought I was done with it. It's uh-huh. like, oh shoot, there was one other thing I wanted to look up. Control shift T. And
boom.
It came back. The last tab was restored. So
nice.
All right. So your tech pick.
All right. Well, my tech pick, actually, I feel like I'm doing like shameless plugs here today over and over again. But it came out of Library of Congress is doing their very first online conference at the end of October. And it's called the Library of Congress and Teachers Unlocking the Power of Primary Sources. And it'll be live 2 nights. You can participate as part of a webinar, or they're going to be recorded and available. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited because I get to do a session on the 28th, and it's building literacy muscle with primary sources. Mm-hmm. And so just talking about primary sources through the lens of literacy. And that, but I needed headphones with a microphone mm-hmm. for that. And actually, this is bringing up all kinds of new things. It's a whole new way of teaching for me because it's not verbal exchanges, but it's me talking and they're going to be typing. Chatting.
It's a chat window.
Right. And so that's going to be a whole new experience for me. But I did have to get some headphones with a microphone. So mm-hmm. I got some Logitech. Mm-hmm. And wow, the audio is very impressive. I listened to some music and it's incredible. But just that whole approach to interacting with other people too, mm-hmm. as because we do a lot, you know, we don't meet in person because TPS folks are all over the country. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of meetings online with, you know, different programs and things, platforms and that. But I've always called in with the telephone separately. Mm-hmm. So now I think I'm going to, you know, like just jump off the edge there mm-hmm. and actually go in and try it with the headset through the computer mm-hmm. to do it all computer-based.
So we need to go through a little rapid prototype session right there before
you
do it. This is just natural for tech people because we have to troubleshoot these problems.
Right.
So before this happens, I think you're using Adobe Connect.
We are.
So we'll have to load that on your computer if it's not already.
Right.
You've got your headsets. Make sure the audio, you know, and the webcam, the video is working properly to avoid any, you know, last minute catastrophes or anything.
Yes.
And then if there were a catastrophe, is there a plan B? I guess you would have the link to go to either an alternate content site, or you're going to have it recorded.
Yes, you know, we're going to do a trial run first, so I don't know if we'll maybe record the run through.
And again, you know, we live in the real world. Things go wrong in the real world. And even with this rapid prototype process, you can miss things.
Mm-hmm.
Just an example, before you came in, I set up the microphones. I always do my tests and things. And somebody was mowing right outside the window here. So it's like, oh, what am I going to do? You know, it's time to record and stuff. Luckily, you know, it didn't take very long. Or you'll run into, here's another common situation for teachers. They'll go home, do their lesson plans, want to show a YouTube video, go to school, and it's blocked.
Yes. Or the internet's down.
Or the internet's down, you know, Wi-Fi. So we always need to have these plan Bs out there.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, but I really hope some of the folks will check out
the link there.
Brand new adventure.
What date were you going to have the webinar?
It's on October 27th and 28th in the evenings, and mine is on...
If you want to participate live.
Yeah.
If you want to ask Cindy a question in the chat window.
Yes. And my session will be October 28th at 5 p.m. Central Time.
Okay, great. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks.
That wraps it up for episode 181 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. If you have a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
And Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.